You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. I'm from the program that puts his money where his fantasies are. On the Fantasy Sports Network, we've got a great show lined up for you this afternoon. We're going to kick things off with Mark Lawrence, literally and figuratively, as we officially begin our College of Football Conference previews on today's program. We go in alphabetical order, man. We don't hand pick. Sometimes it's sexier than others, but we're starting off with the American Athletic Conference on the program today. And I'll tell you what, there's some pretty good football teams in the American Athletic Conference and some damn good quarterbacks in the American Athletic Conference. And I'm telling you right now, the quarterback of the Memphis Tigers is better than Paxton Lynch was. Paxton Lynch went in the first round. Keep your eye on Riley Ferguson. We're going to talk about Riley Ferguson. We're going to talk about Quentin Flowers. And we're going to talk about the American Athletic Conference. Our boy Cameron 2 Drew will be pleased to note that if we're doing the AAC today, that means that next week is the ACC. All right, we're hitting the ACC next week. We go in alphabetical order. It is what it is. And our boy Tim Anderson, and God bless you, Tim. Tim responded to my tweet this morning. I said, yeah, we're kickstarting our college football previews. He asked me, so are you doing Notre Dame? When's Notre Dame? Is Notre Dame in the ACC part of the ACC preview? No, they are not part of the ACC preview. They are part of the Independence preview. So we'll get to the eyes. We get to Notre Dame. So Mark Lawrence going to join us. Going to focus in on college football with Mark. We'll talk a little Major League Baseball with Mark. We got baseball covered with one of the best in the business. Gary Thorne, play-by-play man of the Baltimore Orioles. Baltimore Orioles. The guy's been a play-by-play man for everything. Gary Thorne will join us on the program. My main man, Lou from Gamblu.com. We'll talk a little UFC Singapore. Shaking things up, man. It's the summertime. There's going to be a lot of fights coming up. Cards, whatever. You know, this is a so-so card. The so-called big 4th of July card, kind of, it is what it is, but, ooh, they're working on Mayweather. Really interesting. I told you guys that's not happening. There's no way in hell it's going to happen. I'm starting to think that it actually might happen, but I didn't realize that Dana White was going to be told to leave the room. So that's the deal here. Dana White has been told, listen, Mayweather doesn't like you. You're not getting this done, and we're not going anywhere with this. It's not happening. Word on the street is Lorenzo Fertitta is actually the one that's dealing with Mayweather right now for real. And it's nothing against Dana White when I say this, but you can't put Dana White and Floyd Mayweather at both ends of a table and expect to come out with a deal. That wasn't going to happen. So, you know, the UFC actually a little bit smarter than I thought they were going to be about this, and taking Dana White reportedly, supposedly out of the rotation, and they're dealing with this, and they brought Fertitta in because Fertitta's a Vegas guy and he knows Mayweather, etc. And, oh yeah, Lorenzo Fertitta doesn't troll Mayweather on Twitter like everybody else does. But nevertheless, we're talking UFC. You know, listen, let's be real. Holly Holm and Beth Correa is the main event. They're both terrible. Like, I'm going to call it out for what it is. They both suck, all right? And the number is huge. But there's a couple of decent fights and a couple of decent bets I think we can find here. All right, so like I said, man, we got a great show lined up for you today. We got a ton of hot takes. We got a ton of picks and everything else in between. But the NBA season might be done, but the crying is not. Ooh, the Golden State Warriors are ruining basketball. They're too good. It's unfair. Kevin Durant, he didn't really earn his championship. Now, I'm seeing a lot of people complain about this, like, super team stuff in the NBA. And I see people say, well, you can't get players to sign in Milwaukee. You can't get players to sign in Memphis. It's not fair. Yeah, because I know Oakland's some paradise, right? Like, Oakland's a paradise. Oakland's a dump, man, all right? The Golden State Warrior players don't even live in Oakland. Like, you know, they're leaving Oakland, all right? The fact of the matter is, it's not like Oakland's some sexy place that everybody wants to move to and play. What about New York? Oh, it's a small market, right? What about New York? New York's the biggest market in America. They still suck. It's not your freaking market. All right, I'm so sick of this defeatist loser attitude, man. And Adam Silver steps up and says, you know what? How about the rest of the league actually tries to catch up and get creative and actually do their freaking jobs, man? You know, seriously, you know, all this attitude, everybody, I hear from everybody, from fans, from analysts, from everybody. Well, you know what? You know, the Raptors can't beat the Cavs anyway, so we might as well not do anything. That's like stating, you know what, Donald Trump's rich, so I might as well not try to get rich because I'm never going to be as rich as Donald Trump is, so why should I try? Like, what kind of loser society are we living in right now? That we expect champions, we expect winners to come down to our little loser level. Ooh, you're too good. Ooh, stop trying to win so much. Nobody's stopping you. Nobody's stopping you from trying to win so much. All right? The Golden State Warriors weren't always some powerhouse. They built a powerhouse. You know, do your job, man. I want to go Christian Bale right now. Man, you're amateur. All right, which leads me into, like, is this real? Is this April Fool's Day? Yeah, like, is this real? Like, I saw this, I was like, is this, that's got to be the onion.com, right? That's not real. Julian Edelman of the New England Patriots asked about the Golden State Warriors and Cleveland Cavaliers final. Says, well, you know, it's really not fair that the Golden State Warriors signed Kevin Durant. They were already the best team. And sort of going down the same route, it's bad for basketball. It's unfair that they loaded up. Yeah, I can almost, I don't even know where to start on this. Dude, you play for the New England Patriots, all right? You guys have been cheating for the last 14 freaking years. No, longer, 16 years. You had the script, you had the playbook of the Rams. You know, we can go down the list from Deflategate to Spygate to this gate and every other freaking gate in between. But whatever. I don't hate the New England Patriots for trying to win. You know, that's what you're supposed to do. You know, Darth Vader wasn't flying around space to lose. You know what I'm saying? You play to win the game. Hello? But Julian Edelman. So let me see. You guys won the Super Bowl, but you signed Brandon Cooks. You poached Mike Gillisley from the Buffalo Bills. Oh, yeah, you signed the number one available defensive back on the market, and Stephon Gilmore of the Buffalo Bills. You already have, you know, you won the Super Bowl without Rob Gronkowski last year. Rob Gronkowski's coming back. Well, why not sign Dwayne Allen as well, right? You know, but as a Buffalo Bill fan, I don't sit here and cry and bitch about the New England Patriots being as good as they are. I don't hate the Patriots for being good. I hate the Buffalo Bills for not being good. Nobody stopped the Buffalo Bills from getting Brandon Cooks. Nobody stopped the Buffalo Bills from re-upping Gilmore, although I'm glad they didn't. He's overrated. Darby's better than you are anyways, Gilmore. We can go down the list. You know what I mean? Nobody is stopping anybody from trying to make their team better. Owners and general managers just don't. They'd rather point the finger. Oh, life's unfair. It's their fault. They're like the Democrats. They don't have a freaking clue. It's Trump's fault. Everything's Trump's fault. Figure it out, jackasses. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. We are live. I am Gabriel Morenci. I know the U.S. Open is rapidly approaching, but obviously Mayo and Stewart and all the guests have you covered. Mayo was with us yesterday. But the Raging Redhead and I, of course, Red Heat and Rage Radio tonight, live at 10 o'clock on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We will be joined by one of the best golf handicappers in the business. The guy's awesome. You know what, he used to write with Vegas Insider, but of course he stepped down from Vegas Insider. There was no hard feelings, but Dan Daly, very busy man, big shot real estate in Dallas, Texas, but great golf mind. He's going to join us on the radio show tonight. We've got Gary Thorne, one of the best play-by-play guys ever. Gary Thorne's going to join us in a couple of moments. We've got Lou from Gamblu.com talking UFC. UFC Fight Night 111 from Singapore this Saturday. We've got one of the best in the business, the best newsletter and playbook, playbook.com's Mark Lawrence. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing absolutely terrific, Gabe. How are you doing?
We're ready to talk some college football, Mark. I almost feel like I had to do a little studying last night. Like, I've kicked the tires. I've talked a little college football on my podcast in a looser form. But this is our first official formal conference preview. And we're going in alphabetical order. So we start off with the American Athletic Conference. Solid conference. I think it's the best of the group of five by far. Something that I noticed, courtesy of your database, they do struggle in bowl games. Something to remember when we got to the end of the year, 6-14 straight up, 7-13 in the 20 bowl games in the 4 years the conference has been in play. But I look at the top-tier teams in this conference, and there's some pretty good football teams, and specifically a pretty damn good football team in Tampa Bay right now. And I'm not talking about the Buccaneers, but USF, you know, they're 150-1 to win it all. And Quentin Flowers, a 40-1 outside long shot to win the Heisman. I'm not saying Flowers wins the Heisman, but I'm telling you what, he's going to put up numbers that won't be ignored this year, Mark.
Yeah, he'll be the leading quarterback in this conference, and that says a lot because there's a lot of offense in this conference, and Flowers will probably lead the pack, him or at Tulsa. But the bottom line here is there's a lot of offense to like. There's a lot of good coaches also in this conference, Gabe. You talk about Charlie Strong coming over from Texas. That's going to help this program at USF. But you've also got some great coaches that are going to be coaches at other big programs coming down the road. You take a look at Philip Montgomery. A lot of good coaches here in this conference. We're going to talk about Mike Norvell at Memphis in a little bit of a while here. So these are coaches that Chad Morris, SMU, that are groomed right now in this going to be Power 5 conferences. They're in the group of five right now, but this conference is loaded with good coaching.
You know, you look at Quentin Flowers. He accumulated 42 touchdowns last year. He's part of 42 touchdowns. He's got some playmakers back. Defensively, so Taggart's gone. He goes to Oregon, but they bring in Charlie Strong, who's known for his defense, obviously. Charlie hopefully doesn't mess around with his offense. I don't think he will. I'm looking at their schedule. Every so-called tough game they have is at home. I'm telling you, Mark, I think the South Florida Bulls legitimately could be undefeated this year in the regular season.
Well, they're going to be favored in probably 10 football games this year, Gabe. And that says that goes a long way towards possibility of being undefeated. They look to be possibly the group of five team that will enter into the New Year's Day 6 bowl party, if you will. They've only got three teams on their schedule this year that had winning records last year. So a soft schedule bodes them well. Charlie Strong needs to do what he does best. That's to instill defense, because this team went backwards 100 yards a game defensively last year. So if Strong can implement the defense here, USF looks to be the team to beat in the AAC this year.
The rest of the Eastern Division is really in rebuilding mode. Cincinnati Bearcats, Tuberville is out. Former Buckeye Luke Fickell is in. Nice spot for him to be in, actually, for Fickell. Stick starters back on offense and defense. Hayden Moore still there at quarterback. He's battling right now with Ross Trail for the starting spot. We got UConn. What's old is new again. And Randy Edsall reminds me, Mark, of a guy from a small town that moves to the big city. And things didn't go very well for him in the big city. But they're like, we still love you here. You know, come back. You're all good here. You know, that's what he reminds me of.
Well, he reminds them of their winning ways, their winning days in the past. They're going back to the future, if you will, UConn is, with Randy Edsall. And they need to, because this football team only scored 20 touchdowns last year, the worst in all of college football last year. So they need some sort of a spark. They think Randy Edsall just might be that guy. And you're talking about Luke Fickell coming in at Cincinnati. I think it's a great hire. He's an Ohio boy, born, bred, and raised. He coached at Ohio State when Jim Tressel stepped down. He's all about defense. He's got that in his DNA. Cincinnati went backwards 164 yards defensively last year. So if he can bring the defense back to Cincinnati, they could be a player in this conference as well.
As far as UConn is concerned, they're always scrappy defensively. And you know, if they could ever get some production from their quarterback and get some wide receivers there, obviously they're pedestrian on offense. But all five starting offensive linemen are back. You got a veteran team, actually, and now they're going to be better coached. You know, this is a dangerous team, aren't they? I'm saying from a cover perspective, they could be a live home dog a lot this year.
They could be. That's Randy Edsall's MO. He did a great job covering as an underdog when he was the head coach at UConn in their heyday. They started out 3-3 last year. They lost their last six games of the season when everything went south. I think they could be a sneaky sleeper good team, especially in the point spread wars this year.
Temple really came on last year, over the last couple of years. Matt Rhule did a great job building the program there. And for some reason or another, he thought that Baylor would be a better job than going to Eugene. For the life of me, I can't figure this one out. I get him leaving for another spot. But why the hell would you go to Baylor, of all places, right now? But nevertheless, he did. So you look at who they bring in. Jeff Collins, Florida Gators defensive coordinator, tells me, Mark, that this is going to be a defensive-minded football team. You know, that's okay, but, you know, you got bad news. You lost your quarterback. And, you know, that kid Walker pissed me off a lot, Mark. I'm going to be honest with you. But he was a good quarterback, you know. But he did upset me often. But, you know, not being talked about. You lost a number of first-round draft pick in Hassan Reddick. Linebacker extraordinaire. You lose your coach. You lose your quarterback. You lose your best defensive player. To me, this team's rebuilding.
Well, yes, why Matt Rhule went to Baylor, two reasons. Number one, they're a Power 5 conference. Number two, the greenbacks in Dallas are mighty big. That's oil country. They pay real well in Baylor. That's why Matt Rhule made the move over there from Temple. This is a football team here. They made a great hire in Jeff Collins, defensive coordinator from Florida here. They were all about defense at Temple when Rhule ruled the roost, if you will, there. All about defense here. I think he's going to help this football team defensively, maybe overcome some of their shortcomings here right now because they are awfully thin with returning talent coming back here. They're probably going to battle to stay out of the cellar, if you will, in this division here. But I think in the end, he'll end up being a good hire.
All right. It's clear that the Bulls are the class of this division this year. The West is a little bit more wide open and more competitive, actually. And let's start off with a team that I'm very, very impressed with, this quarterback. And to me, Paxton Lynch was a first-round draft pick, even though I didn't think he should have been. And I warned people about Paxton Lynch. But with that being stated, this Riley Ferguson kid, to me, he's got NFL written all over him. I mean, you know, the only thing is he's not a prototypical new mobile quarterback, but we're talking about one of these big gunslinger kids. Remember in the bowl game last year, Mark? This kid, like, had concussions. He was puking. Like, he sucked it up. Like, he went back out there, man. He was like, no, put me back in. You know, this kid's hardcore. He wants to win. He's got a cannon of an arm. Hell of a quarterback. I'm telling you, this kid's going to put up massive numbers this year.
You know, we talked a little bit about Jarrett Stidham at Auburn being a sneaker in the Heisman Trophy race. So too could Riley Ferguson, especially with the type of numbers he's expected to put up this football season here. This is probably, for all intents and purposes, the team to beat in the West. The West is really a talented division here. There's any one of five teams that could steal this division. But right now, as we speak, Memphis looks to be that team. They're the most explosive offensively. They do have some defensive issues here.
Yeah, they got tough defensive issues, as in they're terrible on defense. I love Riley Ferguson, but I just want to say, yeah, they got defense. Yeah, like as in they're terrible on defense. Yeah.
They are, but like also, like I mentioned before, they could also be favored in 10 football games this year. And if they are, they're going to probably likely be the team to beat here right now. They got tough road games.
Yeah.
They're going to be at Houston and Tulsa. So they got to step up and play games away from home. But Riley Ferguson, as you mentioned, keep that quarterback's name in mind. He could be a sleeper, maybe even appear in New York when the Heisman Trophy awards are given out.
You mentioned the Houston Cougars. They were a trendy team the last couple of years, and they were extremely good to me, starting with the big upset victory against Florida State in the Peach Bowl a couple of years ago, and then starting the season last year with the outright win against Oklahoma. You know, it was an ATM machine with Coach Herman there. So Herman, skips, goes over to Austin, and speaking of Austin, former Texas Longhorn quarterback Major Applewhite makes me feel old, Mark. You know, and I see these kids that I remember playing as young punks. And I'm like, dear God, the guy's the head coach of the team now. Major Applewhite. And speaking of making me feel old, Brian Johnson, and only hardcores will know this, but Brian Johnson is the new offensive coordinator at Houston. He was the Utah Ute quarterback. OC at he's been climbing the ranks. OC at Utah, offensive assistant, OC, etc. But now I feel real old, Mark. I saw Brian Johnson play in an all-star game in Houston, Texas, when he was like 17, before he played down at Utah. I saw his last high school game against Team Canada at the Super Bowl, the New England Patriots, Carolina Panthers, Nipplegate, Janet Jackson game. So that's how old I am, and I feel now. I'm like, man, I saw this kid in high school. Now he's the offensive coordinator in the Houston Cougars in his hometown. And clearly, Brian Johnson's going to be a head coach in a couple of years.
He was a great quarterback at Utah, Gabe. You remember he was injured quite a bit in the games he didn't play. There were some major moves and lines in games that he didn't play in. I think he's a great hire for this football program here. But don't feel old just remembering going back at Brian Johnson. I feel old every time I look in the mirror these days. I don't have to remember Brian Johnson.
You got more hair than I do, Mark. So you, all right, we've only got like 90 seconds. Navy, always dangerous. It's a system. It's a program. You know, they got a new quarterback in here, but he got some experience late in the year last year in Zach Abbey. And I like what you said, Mark. You know, this team lost three games in a row. They're coming in on a three-game losing streak. Last time they went on a three-game losing streak, there was hell to pay after.
Yeah, there sure was. This football team really plays well in games off three-game losing streaks. Coach N, they went 26-5, by the way, as you mentioned, in the, after losing three in a row. So that will be a big boost for this football team this year. But Coach N will have this team prepared this football season here. My only concern is the defense went backwards last year. If he can shore up the defense, we'll be watching Navy in another bowl game this year.
Quick gambling note for everybody. East Carolina Pirates. And East Carolina lose their quarterback. They lose their star wide receiver, Zay Jones. And even with those guys, 2-16 straight up, 0-18 against the spread versus conference foes with a winning record. That's something to write down, guys. All right, Mark, we got to get out of here, but your free play of the day today. I cashed the Dodgers last night, but, man, I had the under. All those late runs really upset me. Puig gives the finger to the Indian fans. What do you like tonight?
I'm going with Corey Kluber right back at the Dodgers here tonight. Kluber's back on the beam. He's in walk-to-strikeout ratio form par excellence. I think he's a much better pitcher than Brandon McCarthy here. A buck and a half at home, I think he's worth the lay.
Mark Lawrence, playbook.com. We encourage people to get the digital version over at playbook.com or on your mobile device, and it'll be on a newsstand near you June 27th. Mark, always a pleasure.
My pleasure, Gabe. Enjoy the games. Be good.
Mark Lawrence with us. Great stuff talking college football. Next week, we talk a little ACC football. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. We're very excited. It's our honor to welcome a legendary play-by-play man, one of the best ever. You name a sport, he's done it. Now covers the Baltimore Orioles, joins us on a game day, and I really appreciate it. The one and only Gary Thorne joins us. Gary, it's always a pleasure, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. Good to be here.
So you guys are in Chicago. I know things aren't going well for the club right now. We'll get to that in a minute, but you've been around. Favorite cities like Chicago, you know, is it Boston? Like what cities do you like going and saying, you know what? I can't wait to get a steak there, pizza there, a meal here. Where are your favorite cities, Gary?
Well, you're hitting on the right thing. It's all about food. Even though we don't have many nights off to eat. It's one of the things I do in all the cities we visit. Oh, there aren't many I don't like. I mean, I love Chicago. Boston's the, city that was mine growing up in Maine, so it was my first city. San Francisco is outstanding. I mean, there aren't many that aren't, really. It's great. It's one of the real pluses of doing professional sport, being able to travel around, see these cities, and once in a while actually get a little time to enjoy them.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so I wanted to ask you, because you've covered a lot of sports, that there's been a lot of talk over the last couple of days about how the NBA is ruined. The Golden State Warriors have ruined the NBA. And I did some number crunching. Six NBA teams have won in the last 9 years. Three teams have won 8 of the last 9 Stanley Cups, Gary. But everyone says, oh, hockey's so unpredictable, yet it's been the Red Wings, the Blackhawks, the Penguins, or the Kings that have won 8 of the last 9 Stanley Cups, with the exception of the Bruins. But I look at baseball, no salary cap in baseball. 7 different teams have won a World Series in the last 9 years without a salary cap. So it's a two-pronged question. Are dynasties good or bad in your opinion? What do you think when you hear people say, oh, it's boring when the same team wins all the time? And what's your take on the fact that baseball is unpredictable and there's no salary cap?
Well, the argument about teams dominating is forever. It's never going to go away. The Celtics in basketball, the Yankees when they were running the table, the Montreal Canadiens when they had all the Quebec draftees available to them first. I mean, it goes on forever. The fans are cheering for the teams that win, say, oh, it's great. It builds up interest. It creates rivalries. Those for the teams that aren't winning, oh, nobody else ever gets a chance. Who cares? Who's interested? Yeah, take your pick. I mean, it doesn't matter. It hasn't hurt sports one way or the other. And this has been going on for centuries here, ever since it's been sports. So that argument to me is just, it's meaningless. It's
so
just,
were people in the 50s? Were people in the 50s saying the same thing? Like, oh, God, it's so boring. Oh, yeah. The Yankees win every year.
Oh, every year back in the 20s. I mean, you can go for the history of sports. Whatever team happened to come up with a few wins in a row, everybody said, oh, that's the worst thing that ever happened to sports, except for the fans who cheered for them. It's neither here nor there. It doesn't affect anything. I think, if anything, it builds up interest because you got teams you love to hate, and so you're always looking to say who can beat them, when are they going to lose. It's just part of sports. And in baseball, I think one of the reasons why it happens that other teams compete is that the season's so long, and the number of players capable of playing at the major league level is going down. I mean, there aren't enough players. Baseball overexpanded. It's why we have all this problem with pitching. And it's not going to get any better, I don't think, in the near future, because it just doesn't seem to be this groundswell of talent in baseball ready to come in and take over. Thank God for the Harpers and the Aaron Judges and the Trouts of the world, Manny Machado for the Orioles. Baseball, not all sports, but I think baseball in particular now is built around individuals. It's not built around teams. The reason baseball keeps going are stars. And that's the way our society is. I say ours, U.S., somewhat less true probably in Canada. But in the U.S., it's all about stars. It's generating star interest. And that's what sports feeds off. And if you don't have that, I don't care what the team is, people aren't going to watch.
You're exactly right. Look at the New York Yankees and their start this year. Yeah, it doesn't matter. The Yankees could be, the Yankees were 21-8 or whatever. And, they had a great record, a great start, biggest market, biggest media market. It wasn't all that sexy. It didn't catch on. What's caught on?
No.
One player. Aaron Judge is caught on right now, right? Where he's almost, it's like you said, I almost get like Aaron Judge, almost like Steph Curry now. Like, it's almost the way they have to market it, isn't it, Gary?
Yeah, it is, because what you did with expansion is, number one, you diluted talent. So you can't say you've got these great teams. I mean, once in a while you can, but great teams are hard to come by. And you've got so many players and so many teams, people can't keep up with it. I mean, when I was a kid growing up, it was six in the American League. I knew every player for the Red Sox who I cheered for, and I knew every player on the opposing teams and where they batted. But you can't do that anymore. I mean, you just can't. It's just too much, too many. And so you have to market particular people, and they have to be stars. They have to be performing. They have to be doing things that people are interested in. So, that's what you do in marketing sports.
Let me ask you, Gary, compared to 20 years ago, let's say, you're doing a baseball game. How many times before a game did you have to say, oh, man, who's this guy? What's the pronunciation? What's the deal? What's his background? You knew every guy. You could be out at the hotel. You were drinking with them. You'd be like, ah, the bullpen, this guy, Jones, Johnson, bam, 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 bam. And like you said, I'm on a fantasy sports network. I'm 46. I'm as hardcore as they come. And I'm not pretending I read, Baseball America's top 500 prospects. But it used to be, Gary, in September, it'd be like, who's this guy starting tonight? Now you get this in May. You're like, who the hell's this guy?
Yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely true. And it's everywhere. It's on every team. And with the unbalanced schedule, you don't get to see, like, we're playing the White Sox. We played three of them at home. We play four here. So a total of seven. Well, and it comes at two different points in the season where the roster's been, half of it's been turned over since the first time you saw them. So you just, and they're out of your division, and then you get interleague play where they're out of your league, God forbid. I mean, you just can't do it. And so all the time you're looking, heck, the way it goes now with the Orioles, I don't even know who's on our roster. We're changing our roster every day because of the pitching problems. We've got one or two guys coming up, some of whom we've really never heard of before. We've only been with the organization for a couple of years. So that's the nature of the beast right now around baseball.
Quickly, I want to, and we're going to get to the Orioles in a second here, but I wanted to ask you about Aaron Judge. so unique. You know, we don't really see big men like this very often. So I was thinking, I wanted to ask you, who does he remind you of over the years? The only guy I thought of was Frank Thomas, the big hurt, really. You know, mm-hmm. in the old days, we had Greg Luzinski, but he was kind of fat. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
It's a little different, right? Like who? What? When you look at Judge, you're like, wow, who does this guy remind you of?
Well, he reminds me of Frank Howard, size-wise and the way he drives the baseball. I mean, even Frank couldn't drive it as far as this guy can. But Frank was one of the three biggest players when you combine height and weight. I mean, Judge is number one now in Major League Baseball history, combining those two for size. But Frank was right there with him. And Frank was the kind of guy, he played for the Washington Senators and around. And when he took batting practice, both his teammates and the opposing teams made sure they were within eyesight because they wanted to see how far is he going to hit the darn thing today. And the same thing's happening with Judge. Everybody kind of sneaks a peek, even on opposing teams, just to watch him and see how far the ball's going to go, because after all, that is the nature of our game this day and age, isn't it? And he's a really nice person, a nice kid. We were just in New York, had a chance to talk with some of the guys who work clubhouses. You want to know what kind of person somebody is, you get to talk to the people who work with him every day with the clubbies who take care of the uniforms, who prepare the meals, who clean up the locker room. They know who's good, who's a good guy. And they don't say very much very often about anything because their job's on the line. But they are effusive about Judge, that he's just the nicest kid, kind to them, takes care of himself, takes care of them, always the thank you stuff, picks up after himself. Now, that may change as the stardom develops, but at least he comes to the major leagues with a obviously great parental background and things that people like.
All right, so before we get you out of here, the Orioles have lost 6 in a row, 8 of their last 10. Seems to be a little bickering going on. Buck, you know, subtle shade, as the kids call it, Gary, threw some shade at the GM with the pitching, saying, you know, what do you want me to do? You know, these guys, you know, it is what it is type of deal. Is there something between Duquette and Buck right now, or is this just tensions are a little high right now? You guys have been on the road for a while. You're getting home. Yes, you got the Cardinals. You got the Tribe. It's not easy, but you're 21-10 at Camden. So it's just this sort of tensions are hot on the road right now, or is there something here?
No, I think it's just that every time any team in professional sports has a slump and goes into a losing streak, these two kind of things come out. It's been this way all season long, even when the Orioles were winning, that the pitching situation was having to be adjusted virtually on a daily basis. Bullpen was getting overused, starters weren't going deep, but the offense covered up for it, and there was enough starting rotation, like twice this season has gone through, you know, the 1-5 and done really well, but only twice. So the bickering about what it's about is no different than what it's been about not only this year, but last year and the year before and the year before that. There's never enough pitching. And I think Bucks just makes the point, you know, when people are asked, well, what's the answer? What's the answer? What are you going to do? Well, what can I do? We are what we are. We have what we have. And right now, that's not very good. It's not very good at the major league level when it comes to pitching starters. And it's not very good at the minor league level. The Orioles do not have right now guys who they thought would perform well at the minors who could be brought up to help. They're not. I mean, the list is a laundry list of AAA, AA pitchers who just aren't getting it done. And that's a real shame for them because they're not doing it at a time where the door is wide open for players in the minors to have a chance at the major league level.
And finally, Gary, we got about 30 seconds. Chris Davis, how long is he going to be out for?
Don't know. I mean, those oblique problems are like hamstrings. They reoccur even when you come back. So they're hoping, you know, this thing will, I suspect, they'll try in 3 to 4 weeks, but don't be surprised if it's longer than that and if it's an ongoing problem for the rest of the year.
I know. I saw Buck saying, I don't know, 1 month, 2 months? Like, he doesn't seem like...
Yeah, I don't know.
Baseball gods haven't been kind to Baltimore this year so far, and that's putting it lightly. Hey, Gary, it's always a pleasure, man. We'll let you enjoy the Windy City on this game day. Thanks so much, sir, for joining us. Always love talking sports with you.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
There's Gary Thorne with his great stuff. We go from Gary Thorne to Gamblew coming up next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Man, I really enjoyed our conversation with Mark Lawrence and then legendary play-by-play man Gary Thorne. Speaking of play-by-play men, there was big news from the world of mixed martial arts yesterday. Bellator announced that they signed both Mike Goldberg and Mauro Ranallo. They signed not one, but two, both of them. And people are wondering, what does this mean? Are they going to rotate on a weekly basis? Are they actually going to broadcast fights together? I say, hey, why not? Like, it would just be, you imagine, yo, 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 and away we go. It's all over. Like, that's a rap song right there. Like, that's a mix. I think it's already been done. Somebody did it last night. I think somebody already merged. Actually, you know what? Goldberg and Ronaldo together might be too much. You put me on top of that and people will be committing suicide. Be like, oh, no, I can't take it. I think it's a great move. I'm interested to see what they do. Let's bring in Lou from Gamblu.com. Lou doesn't watch Bellator, though, so it doesn't matter to Lou. What's up, Lou?
Well, I'm having to pay more attention to it as the flight of decent fighters starts to go that way. I do still sense, I won't bet it, but I do still sense it's a secondary league, but it's starting to gain parity, and I'm going to have to regard it with more seriousness moving forward, especially since there's fighters like McDonald and, of course, Benson Henderson, and they're getting some real name fighters that I'm going to be forced to address it here sooner than later.
No, I agree. At Bellator, I think it's been a slow progression for them. I'm not going to criticize their circus sideshow stuff. Word is Vanderlei Silva is not even going to show up for that fight against Sonnen already, and they have a plan B planned. So I don't know. At times it can be a mess, but this is a sign in the right direction. It shows good intentions of what they're trying to accomplish. UFC Fight Night 111 from Singapore. Preliminaries begin at about 4:45 Eastern or so, if you're wondering about the time. And I don't really understand this because they're 12 hours ahead. So what does this mean? They're going to be starting at 5 in the morning there, the prelims? Like, I don't get it, but I guess it doesn't matter. What's that, Warman? Our main card's at 8 a.m. 8 a.m. what, Sunday morning? Saturday morning? All right, so I apologize to the viewers. I'm getting the final stuff. I'd ask her, are you sure, but are we broadcasting it? So this is why you know? So you're telling me the prelims start at 4:45 a.m.
Wow. That's right.
Wow. All right, Lou. So that's 1:45 for you. That's not too bad. You'll be up late, I guess.
Well, actually, this weekend, I'm in Las Vegas. I'm going to submit a College World Series article to the boys at VSiN. I'm bringing my wife up there, and so I'm not going to work this card outside of a couple of angles I'm going to share with you and everybody here today.
Well, it's a terrible card, let's be honest. Let's start off with Holly Holm. She's a -640 favorite against Beth Correa. Pretty hard to promote this when Gegard Mousasi said the other day, Beth Correa is the worst fighter in the world. Holm hasn't won a fight since November the 14th, 2015, when she beat Ronda Rousey. She's lost to Tate, Shevchenko, and Randami since then. She's now 35 years old. Beth is 33, 4 inches shorter. The total is 4.5 here. I'm not laying -600 here, Lou. What do you do with this?
Oh, I think you just take a home by decision. And, you know, if you got to bet it, I mean, or you take the over 4.5, because I believe that home is going to have a hard time with Bethe, only in that Bethe's tougher than John Wayne's saddle. And I don't think home's going to be able to put her away. It's not a fight I've targeted, and quite honestly, it's below the standard of a UFC main event, in my opinion.
It's baffling. All right, Tybura and Arlovski. Now, listen, Arlovski, the last time Arlovski lost four fights in a row, and I remember me and Joey Odessa were riding the wave, and we were winning every time betting against him. Then he won four in a row. I don't see a four-fight win streak coming around the corner here, but are you willing to lay -260? You're a dog better generally, Lou. What's your take on this fight?
My take is that Orlovsky has lost to top flight opponents. And while Tabura is surely, you know, the younger man, he's not the bigger man. And he doesn't necessarily hold terrific physical advantages over Orlovsky. And his win against Henrique the last time, that was a decent win. Tabura almost seemed surprised by it. I think I'm ready to take a swing with Orlovsky, and I do think this dog position, this is a dog or pass fight for me with an Orlovsky that knows that if he loses, he probably goes, and he just watched an old Mark Hunt, you know, bear down and win a fight. Maybe Orlovsky's got something here.
I think you're on to something as well. I bet on worse things. It's a nice plus money shot. We've got a puncher's chance here. Like you said, you know, Orlovsky lost to Ngannou. He lost to Josh Barnett. He lost to Overeem. He lost to Stipe. You know, it's, you're losing to the top heavyweights. You know, he shouldn't be fighting these guys. Now he's fighting a guy that's more in his comfort zone. I think we got a live dog here as well. I really do. All right, do we have a live dog in this next one with Covington and Dong Young Kim? Kim's 35 years old now. But the guy is 7-1 in his last 8 fights, Lou, with that only one loss being to T-Wood and Tyron Woodley. Covington's 11-1, but he really hasn't beaten anybody. Like, who's Covington's most impressive win against? Mike Pyle. All right, Mike Pyle's like 40 years old right now. What do you make of this fight and Covington minus 215?
Well, I quite honestly think that his last win, Covington's, against Brian Barberina. I think Barberina's an easy guy because he's not dynamic anywhere. He's an easy guy to overlook. But once he moved to 170, I think Barberina is a top 20 fighter in that division, and that win against him is worthy. But Covington was able to do what Barberina likes to do to his opponents, and that is bully him, smother him, and take him down and display, you know, a wrestling clinic. Now, Kim is going to be a substantially larger, taller, longer man. He's extremely strong, and I'm not of the ilk to underestimate Kim. I think this should be closer to a pick'em fight. Covington, I'm seeing him. He opened 165. I don't know where he sits now. He looks like he's sitting at minus 235 or so now. This is another dog or pass based on Kim's size, his strength. And if Covington can't get him down, this could be Kim carving up Covington a little bit. I like Kim.
You know what? I can't disagree here. I think between Orlovsky and Kim, all we need to do is hit one of them to show a profit. I think we've got a live dog here as well. You got the long international travel for Colby. You've got to step up in competition. You've got a guy that's not going to be easy to take down, a guy that's a great grappler. And you took the words right out of my mouth. Very, very strong man, a big man at plus money. I like Dong Young Kim here as well. This next fight, Bruce Leroy, Cesaris, taking on Dai. You know, Leroy, he's 2-5 in his last 7, but I like this kid, Lou. He shows up to fight. You know what I mean? He shows up to fight. They always give him these tough dudes. He's lost, you know, he lost to Yair Rodriguez and to Jason Knight. Now he gets a guy on short notice. But this dude is actually the son of Indian boxing legend Rolando Navarrete, 57-14 fighter, former super featherweight world champion. So he does come in with a little family pedigree here. But he's an 8-4 fighter that's fought in, you know, tomato cans.
I don't want to comment on Rolando's history. What I will focus on is the fact that, and you hit it, yeah, losses to Rodriguez and Knight for Alex Caceres is nothing to be shunned for. He's beaten the likes of Rivera and Miller prior. And this is a classic mismatch. And the current pricing makes it tough to take Caceres at a minus 300. Nobody likes to play that kind of money. But here's what's going to happen in this fight. Caceres works his butt off in the gym, and he is completely focused and ready for this fight. Dai is a stand-up, Muay Thai-based fighter. It's going to be 3 minutes for Caceres of moving around and being fluid like he was with Yair Rodriguez. And then after 3-4 minutes, Caceres is going to take this man down to the ground, and he's going to submit him. So you want to take the under 2.5, or you want to take Caceres inside the distance 120. Doesn't matter to me which prop you play, but Alex Caceres is going to submit or finish this man before the end of the fight. That's my position on this fight.
So you like the under 2.5?
Absolutely.
We didn't bring up Safadine. So who else is on this card, Warren? Yeah, it's Dos Anjos and Safadine. Tarek, for the record, we brought up these fights, you know, the two main events, and these other two fights were specific because Lou wanted to talk about from a betting standpoint. But do you have a take, Lou? We've only got about a minute. Do you have a take on the Dos Anjos fight?
Yeah, all I'm willing to say is I disagree with the Dos Anjos look.
Lou from Gamblu.com, short and sweet. He disagrees. Great, great stuff as always, Lou. I figured we'd get you, we mix it. I like to mix it up a little bit. We figured we'd get you on earlier. It worked out for you anyways on the live show. But Lou's going to dig in deeper throughout the week. And if there's any other picks, check out Lou's website, Gamblu.com. And we have time throughout the week as well to lock in our final wagers for this card. But I like where we're going with this, man. I like Arlovsky as a dog. I like Dong Young Kim as the dog. I'll ride the under with you on the Bruce Leroy. And I'm going to go over on the Holly Holm fight. Always a pleasure, Lou.
My pleasure completely. Enjoy the fights, everyone.
Lou from Gamblu.com. Plays of the day next. All right, it's time for our plays of the day, and I've only got four picks. We have a lot of afternoon baseball going on. I'm going to start off with the Boston Red Sox. Yes, I know they're back in Philadelphia right now, but nevertheless, man, I don't care. Yeah, Brian Johnson, for those about to rock. Camera two, Drew, what song is that?
We Salute You.
It's pretty good, actually. It's the actual title, but he got it. He said, We Salute You. Man, this kid surprised me sometimes. Red Sox are going to win. Pirates, I can't believe I'm doing this, man, but the Pirates are hot right now. Cam, good call by Raging Reddit. Cam said, you know what, keep your eye on the Bucks, Gabe. Pirates are turning the corner right now. Pirates, minus 105 tonight. We're going to take them. Chicago Cubs against the Mets. I'm taking the Cubs because Matt Harvey blows. And the Yankees. Yankees coming off a loss last night. I think they get back in the winner's circle this evening. I like the pitching matchup. We'll lay the 40 cents with the Bronx Bombers. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.